CliffCentral.com.
Yes, indeed. Don't miss the chance to listen to Yaku live this morning on his show at 9 o'clock on CliffCentral.com. It is called, well, it's catalytic. It's called Unbundled. That is coming to you live this morning. All right, so many things to do this morning. So many things to talk about, so many places to go and people to see. We're going to talk, among other things, to Professor Randall Karolisen, who is the Dean of the Johannesburg Business School. He'll be joining us shortly. We've got Lebang, and you've got you, and you've got me. And it's a pretty, pretty good last day of May. So what's on the agenda for the month of June? Well, I'll tell you, just looking at the calendar, we've got a holiday on June the 16th, which, you know, people love a holiday. Nobody complains when those come around. So on June the 16th, which is a Thursday, you get the day off, which means that irritating Friday, which is not a public holiday. Oh, I hate those, because it means that it means you have to take leave on the Friday, right?
Yes. If you're smart, you'll take the Friday off and you've got a long weekend and you're good to go.
I reckon we've got to find a way of getting that Friday off as well. You know what we're like. South Africans are lazy. We'll find a way around it. So,
definitely.
Yeah, we want to hear from you in the comments. We'd love to get your comments. Just drop us a comment on the YouTube. You can also follow us this morning on Twitter and on Facebook. We're streaming live on both.
So yeah,
it's all happening,
which is really exciting. So now you've got options where you
That's
can
right.
watch us.
Yeah, you don't have
to. For your convenience.
You don't have to come onto YouTube. I mean, it's nice because you can comment. But if you want to go onto Facebook or on Twitter, you could do that too. Live streaming across all of them. Loads and loads of fun. All right.
Gareth.
Yes.
Did I tell you? I didn't tell you. I thought I told you this morning. I had like a near scare last night.
What happened?
Like, I was sleeping and then I started getting like Braxton Hicks. So Braxton Hicks are like fake labor, basically.
Oh, shit.
Like prepping you for the real. Dude, it was so scary. Oh, like, I'm just sleeping. Tra-la-la. And then I'm like, what's this pain on my left side? I'm like, oh no. Oh no.
But hang on.
Way too early.
How far off are we still from the due date?
I've got like 5 weeks left to go. So it's
so
happening now, right?
This would have been very early, right?
It would have been very early, but it wouldn't be surprising because my last year, my daughter was due on Valentine's Day and she was actually born on the 21st of Jan, which is what, like 4 weeks. So she was hella early. And then the year before that, my daughter was supposed to come on the 31st of October and she came on the 23rd of October. Okay. So I'm quite used to my kids coming early. And the more babies you have, apparently your body just sort of like, because it knows what it's doing, it just kind of adjusts and it just goes. So last night when I was having these Braxton Hicks, I was like, oh my gosh. Oh no. I was kind of freaking out because it's like, it's a little bit too soon. But either way, my hospital bag is packed. So if anything happens, I'm good to go. I just wasn't obviously going to be on the show today.
Well, you know, if that happens, we'll handle it. But, more important that you're paying attention. Like your body tells you, I assume, weird things when you're pregnant, right? You get feelings that you don't get when you're not pregnant, and there are things that are going on in your body, obviously, that are very foreign and very weird, right?
Yeah. No, definitely. And the trick is to be able to listen to your body. Like when it tells you, sit down, you better fucking sit down. When your feet start swelling, just don't go anywhere. It's just too much. But it's a lot. It was just scary. Like you'd think by now, like I'm pretty used to it. Like, oh, okay, I know what this is. I was just like, no, 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 no. Please stay in there. Don't come out now. It's okay. I was like literally talking to my baby, just telling her to like relax, calm down, drink some water. Luckily, it was just a scare. It wasn't like even like pre-labor or anything like that. So phew. But it's time. Sure. What it means is that any day now, I'll just be calling you guys like, yo, It happened.
But you know what? this is now, for you, it's old hat. I mean, you've had this, you've done this 4 times already.
100%.
So you're like,
100%.
Eh,
but
not
it's
worried.
Never the same thing, Gareth. It's never, ever the same experience. And that's the thing that they don't tell you enough about pregnancy. You always think, oh, I'm going to go through the same shit. Oh, I'm always going to feel like this. Some
right.
babies you can be pregnant with and feel amazing. And then some babies you'll be pregnant with and just feel like crap the whole time. It's always different. It's always a unique experience in the same way, you know, babies are always are different and they do their own thing. Yeah. So yeah, but I'm here. I was worried that I wouldn't make it, but
I'm here. Okay. Well, I mean, listen, if you do call us in the morning and you're like, sorry guys, I'm on my way to the hospital, we'll be like, okay, well, it was bound to happen. It's going to happen sometime.
No, I'll just drop a gif of a baby in the group. I'm not even going to text any words. I'll just drop a gif.
Exactly. We'll know what's going on. So someone sent me this yesterday. What do you think I should make of it? All right. It's a sign of there's a bird with one leg, or it's using one leg, sitting on a sign saying, danger, unstable cliff, keep away from edge. Do you think they're referring to me? I'm an unstable cliff. Is that what that is?
Well, if they sent it to you, I think it's directed at you. Yeah.
I also saw this, which I thought was pretty funny. It says here, how to survive Mercury retrograde. Number one, stop believing in astrology.
Agreed.
There we go. Correct. It's the easiest way to not have any trouble with Mercury retrograde, right? Mercury retrograde. You say that fast enough times, you're going to sound like you've got a problem. Mercury retrograde. Mercury retrograde. Mercury retrograde. Mercury retrograde. Whew. Thank God.
No, you did pretty good. But there's a whole bunch of like things like now out there that you can believe and. Didn't we have a numerologist or something? Mm-hmm. Come in and tell us based on the year that we're born and our birthday, we are in our eighth year, in our second year. It just depends on what you want to believe. And if you want to believe all of that.
That's so funny. Someone says here that your Braxton Hicks, there's an old wives' tale that those pains are when the baby's growing hair.
Congo Chris, how was your experience when you were pregnant? Tell us more.
Exactly.
Tell us about your experience.
Yeah, exactly. This is funny. Propaganda says Lebung has ordered her baby to stay in so by the fourth child, do mothers start disciplining their kids before they're even born?
Probably. You have to start them early. You really have to get them early. So while they're still in the womb, they have their ears already developed. They can hear all sorts of things. So already you need to start laying the whip. You know, they need to know who's in charge. So by the time they come out, it's a smooth transition for them. So you are absolutely correct. Yes.
All right. So this is an interesting discussion because there are many people who own a property that they rent out to other people, including in the townships where you've got people who are renting out RDP houses to like four or five people. That's what happens in South Africa. You've got to use what you've got to make some money. So we've got poor people, rich people, people in the middle who all have tenants. Right. I am trying my best to not be a tenant anymore. I've been trying to sell my place in Sandton for ages now. I've been on the market for like 3-4 years, and it's a shitty time to sell. And I don't need to sell it in terms of like, oh my God, I'm going to be in huge financial shit if I don't. But I also don't particularly want to be a landlord. Being a landlord is horrible, right, Lebung? You're a landlord.
No, it's nonsense. It's never a good time. It just comes with its own, like, pet peeves. And I wouldn't recommend it to anyone. Horrible. Although, I mean, the financial benefits are there. We've had these Egyptian tenants for a couple of years now. So they've been with us maybe 3 years. And the reason why they stay here is just because, you know, they own a barbershop up the road, whatever. Yeah. Just convenience. My mom was like, yeah, cool. We've got the space, whatever. And since they've lived with us, I've just noticed these like very interesting, and I use the word habit to really downplay the bullshit. These people actually just don't know how to live with other people. You'll come home one day and they've repainted the cottage to a different color without asking anyone's permission. You'll come home one day, they're in the kitchen, in the main house, you know, using the washing machine, which is like, okay, cool. Maybe you guys don't have a washing machine, but like, kind of like get your own washing machine, Oaks. Or you'll come back and then if they've asked to like borrow some utensils, those utensils don't come back. And it's just things where I'm like, okay, this is just, there's no boundaries. There's no boundaries. You guys are not able to just like live on your side of the world and let like the main home occupants live their lives. It's just.
So are these people who live on the same property as you?
Yeah. So it's like a cottage on the property, but it's like separate from the main house. So it's like a 2-bedroom that they can access the main house, but they shouldn't.
Yeah. But like this, why are you repainting the crib? This is even worse because now they live on the same property as you. So At least my tenants are in a different city, in a different building. But even that's too much. So, all right, I thought you were going to say to me, you know, these people are a problem because when the geyser bursts, it becomes your issue. Or if there's rising damp, it's your problem. Or if the door won't close properly, it's your problem. All of those things. So I know these are people's problems.
I understand.
These are people's problems that they might actually want. Like some people might go, you know what? I'd rather have those problems and the income. But I'll tell you something. Sometimes it's not worth the money. If you have to solve all these problems, so I've got a tenant. She lives in this flat, and she's actually a pleasure. She pays her rent on time. She's such a professional. She works for some like auditing firm or something, and she's actually a dream. But whenever anything goes wrong, I'm like, ugh, I have to sort it out now. And then I have to find a handyman or a plumber or an electrician.
Yeah, that's your responsibility.
But yours is way worse. Like your people live on the same property as you, and it sounds like they really are difficult.
It's a nightmare. They come back at whatever hour in the night, and if they don't have like their remote, they sit at the gate and they hoot and they hoot and they hoot for freaking hours until somebody opens up. And this is, as I said, at whatever time at night. And obviously you're not going to not open.
Oh my
so then
God.
There's that.
Ugh.
And then the most irritating thing, Gareth, oh my word, is that they keep rotating. So initially when we allowed them to come stay with us, we met like two guys that were like, oh, you guys will be staying here. Cool. Blah, blah, blah. Enjoy your stay. Since then, in the past 3 years, there's probably been like 20 different men that have just been rotated in the space. And we just see random people like at the gate, like, who's that? And it's like, oh, no, I live here. I live here. And I'm like, oh, my
God. I don't want to alarm you, Lebang, but it sounds like you might have an ISIS cell living in your cottage.
Dude, I'm actually scared because I don't even go in there because I'm just like so put off of this whole thing. And I'm tired of telling my mom to get rid of these people because she won't listen to me. But it's just not safe. It just sounds like we have started, as you're saying, like a whole little community of whatever.
It's an ISIS cell, I'm telling you.
Dude, and where do they keep coming from? How do they keep rotating so quickly?
Mm.
No, man, it's very scary. It's very annoying. I think I just need to have a family meeting and just sit my entire family down and just be like, guys, mom has a problem. She doesn't know how to get rid of these people. Let's help her. They are the worst. Gareth, they suck.
I believe you.
They really suck.
I do believe you. So let me just read this quickly because it's a very valuable point. Rusty makes, he says, the law is always in favor of the tenant. The landlord has no rights. By the way, you cannot disconnect their services.
You see?
You can still threaten. You can still threaten violence. I mean, that's always an option. You can always threaten
to what? To Egyptians? To Egyptians? Now I must go to them and be like, "Yo, get the fuck out!" I must tell those guys to get the fuck out. Who must tell them?
I don't know if you want. If you tried really hard, you could be quite scary. No.
I'll probably need to go to like Yeovil and Operia and get some help from someone, but I can't do it myself.
Well, Wen says she eventually managed to get a lady who got rid of her tenants. Still don't know how she did it. Apparently, she threatens them.
Oh, can I get her number, please?
It's very weird. Bishlang says, I've upgraded her a lot over the years. You'd think I'm the landlord. She's so old, I'm the adult here. I introduced her to banking. You see, I'm not an evil tenant. He's talking about his landlord. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Some are cool. I know one of our colleagues that we work with at the office had a huge problem with a much older tenant that kind of was only there for about a month or two and was just causing chaos, sending emails, making demands, like a very, very much older lady. And every week he'd be like, oh, Lebang, this is what she said this time. And those emails were just so chaotic. So it happens. Like, there's just generally like shitty people out there that you should try your best to avoid in trying to rent out your property.
A friend of mine had the great experience of having a family live above him. And he says it always sounded like they were stomping on the floor, like loud. They were like walking around on paint cans, he said. It sounded like whenever they just walked from the bathroom to the bedroom or whatever, it would go clunk, 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 clunk. And he thought these people either wear like high heels the whole time, the men and the women, or they're just doing this to annoy him.
Could be any of the three, really. You'll never know. But you have to find like a fine line, right? Between I hate this person and I'll tolerate them. Because once you become a bit too nice, then they start doing whatever the fuck they want. And then if you're like extremely, extremely like nasty to them, then they'll just be nasty to you. So there needs to just be that place where you're both just like, I'm not going to cross the line. If you don't cross the line, okay, cool. We're both not crossing. Let's just be civil. Just send me my rent on time and I won't bother you.
Right.
Unless some shit comes up. That's it.
Well, a lot of people have climbed onto the fact that you have Egyptian tenants. Propaganda says they are more likely in denial than anything else.
Love it.
How do Egyptians have hot showers? Asks Congo Chris. They have a geyser.
You guys are on a roll today.
We've got the funny people in this morning. Great. That's terrific.
As long as you're not blocking anyone, Gareth, what's the thing of you blocking people from commenting? I saw in the morning there was a bit of a...
Oh, no. I did that by mistake to Sanele last week, and you could see Sanele's back on, but it was by mistake. I clicked the wrong thing, and then it went to like a ban, and I thought, oh no, he's never going to be able to come back on. But speaking of people being blocked, I was standing in the shop yesterday, and a woman said to me, has Fikile Mbalula messaged you lately, which was a strange thing for her to ask. But he did. He actually messaged me over the weekend, the Minister of Transport, out of the blue.
While he was in Paris.
I don't know. Is that where he is?
Yeah, he's in Paris. I think he was watching the tennis. So,
look here.
Because he tweeted, just landed in France or whatever. Everyone's like, Fikile
Mbalula, right? And he sent...
Hey, Gareth, how's it?
Yeah.
So, Minister, are you good? Wow.
So he goes, are you good? So I said, fantastic, thanks. How are you? He said, no qualms, just greeting. Good to hear from you. So I said, well, have a great week. He says, same to you, keep in touch. So I don't know what that means, but...
What does he want? He's buttering you up for something. Something is coming.
You think so?
And they're going to need... come on. You think he's just popping by to just...
Well,
do you think he really cares how you're doing?
No, he's a politician, so obviously.
But exactly.
What could he possibly want from me, Lebang? Let's go. Wild theories.
Well,
I want to hear your wildest theory about what Fikile Mbalula could want.
Things that Fikile Mbalula could possibly want from one Mr. Gareth Cliff. I don't know, his market. There was a possibility that Fikile's got some campaign around the corner that he's prepping for, and he needs the poster child of, like, get away with whatever you want to say in this country to participate in that and back him up. The last thing, the worst thing that Fikile could want from you, Gareth, is to, like, try and bribe you for some shit and, like, try and pay you off to participate. Who knows? What if he's starting a new party?
Hey,
what if
listen,
he's starting a new party
if
and
he
needs a vice?
I will tell you right now. I will tell you on this show so that you know before it even happens, if it ever happens. If a politician comes to me and says, we want you to be on our campaign for X, Y, and Z, we're going to pay you an outrageous amount of money to do it. You better believe I'll do it, right?
Take it, dog. Yeah.
Oh, shizzy. Don't tell me, you can't support this government. They are crooks. They are corrupt. Like you would turn it away if it came to you. Please. You know what I might get back? Because he's the Department of Transport, right?
Yeah.
I might get back all those bribes that I paid cops over the years. That's what I
maybe.
Might. Yeah. So that would be worth
maybe
it.
Maybe. This is your opportunity, Gareth, to convince him to start doing some shit. So remember a couple of weeks ago, like Anela tweeted him and was like, oh, these potholes are killing me. And they got fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is your chance to also just be like, yo, dude, we listened to the audience. They pointed out a couple of potholes that are in major intersections that are really slowing them down. So use it for good.
Maybe
use
I'll
it for
ask
good and
him,
see what he says.
I'll ask him about that Grayston Drive thing he's going to do.
There's that. I mean, worst comes to worst, he's hitting on you, and this is just how he's doing that.
I would like it to be about this is in my fantasy, this is what it is. Gareth, I've decided that I'm going to redo Transnet, and I want you to take all the profits from Transnet and use them as you like. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, now we're definitely in the realm of daydreaming.
Anyway.
Things that are not going to happen.
Yeah.
But keep us in the loop.
I
want to know
I'll
how this
you know.
Is going to go.
Look, I mean...
Because I promise you, he'll be back. He's going to come back and say, hey, now the real reason is...
Yeah. Maybe. So Christy says the Minister of Razzmatazz messaged you. He's definitely buttering you up for something. Congo Chris says, I think Figile would be an absolute beast to joel with. Maybe he wants to go on a bender and knows Gareth would be up for it. Yeah, well, maybe a party is what he's asking. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know the guy very well at all. And I've said terrible things about him. And he's said terrible things about me over the years. So we don't really have issues with each other because it's all already out there and it's water under the bridge. It's also like I understand politicians, right? I used to take it personally when they were upset with me and they'd say horrible things. I mean, even when I was in that case against Mnet and Dalimpofu was my lawyer, remember? And
oh, yeah, we do.
And the EFF were calling me a racist and this and that. And even though Julius was phoning me all the time, like to laugh about what was going on. So I said to Dali, what's going on here? He's like, it's just posturing. So, you know, these guys are like most of the time, they're not being serious about anything. They don't actually have any guiding principles. They're just doing what works for them at the time. And that's okay. And that's why I wouldn't do very well in politics because I can't do that stuff. But for them,
yeah,
I mean, that's how they
work. What they do. It's just smoke and mirrors. Like if he's in the next 2 weeks, maybe going to be speaking in public, he will casually throw it in. I was chatting to my friend, Gareth Cliff, the other day. You know what we are doing in this country? Just to throw that in there and have proof, because you've just shown us that indeed you guys were chatting.
Yeah.
And that's all that it is. You know, he just, you know,
like sometimes,
kind of like thinking for
sometimes I suppose it's useful to claim someone is your friend, huh? Even if they're not.
There you go.
I've never really.
It's name dropping.
Who should I be?
It's name dropping 101.
Who should I hit up in the DM so I can claim they're a friend? Who would be powerful and useful in my world?
Well, if I were you, I'd holler at Cyril so you can just hit it off with the dog chat. Like,
that's
Cyril,
maybe
I saw you and your dog on the balcony. I must say, it really did impress me. And then after that, the world's your oyster.
I think we've already got a better intro than the dog because we know his wife, we know his family. We don't have to use the dog story to get in there.
Yeah.
But I don't really know what would I ask him? Like what for an interview on the show?
Would he even come?
I don't know. Sometimes maybe before elections. That's usually when they make themselves available. But I don't know if I'd even want that. Is that something you'd be excited to do?
Not really,
no.
Not specifically, but it would be interesting to have him on this platform. You know what I mean? Then you can just like be real with him. Like, yo, dude, what are you doing? We know that being president is your side hustle. Why did you agree to this? Like, we know you're not interested.
So
couldn't you just give it to somebody who actually cares?
So it could actually be fun. It could be quite interesting.
Perhaps.
All right. Ask for an air fryer recipe, says Steve. I think you're talking about Tito Mboweni, not Figile. I don't think Figile. Do you think Figile can cook?
No.
No, I don't think so either.
But I don't think Tito even knows what an air fryer is. That man is like the oldest school person in the kitchen you'll find. He is
for sure.
One pot, everything in the one pot. Let it boil for 6 hours in hopes that a stew comes out. That's it. Every week. That's all we get.
So
someone should actually gift him with an air fryer.
Lebang Dude 69 has some suggestions for you with your tenants. Dude 69 says, Lebang, burn your cottage to the ground. You'll never get them out of there.
You know, that's my last option.
If shame.
All else fails, then I'll have, oh, guys, it's so bad. Like, I like that we can laugh about it, but I'm miserable because of it.
I'm sorry, Lebang. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, we talk to JJ Cornish twice a month on our African Analysis feature, which is, of course, brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. So today we're going to speak to the Makulu boss, the dean of the Johannesburg Business School. He is Professor Randall Karulison, and he joins us now. Prof, nice to see you. How are you? Prof, can you hear us? Professor? Hello. I don't think he can hear us. Maybe I'll get
Hi, Prof.
I'll get Simpiwe to just double check with him that he knows what's going on. Because I want to talk to him about Africa Day, which was celebrated last week. We're going to talk about digital transformation in Africa with Prof. Karulison. And we're going to talk a little bit about his life because he's a very interesting man, as you would expect from the dean of the Johannesburg Business School. So we'll have a chat to him and find out all about what he can tell us about digital transformation. Obviously, Africa is the place where there is so much opportunity. There's so much potential. We've got a huge, huge audience, a huge market of consumers who are desperate for all the latest things, and they need to be digitally connected, right? These things, number one.
100%. Let's see if we can get them back. You know, Africa Day came and went, eh?
Yeah.
But it was here.
It was here. We didn't make too much of a fuss about it, but maybe we should have. Mm. And that's what we'll find out from the prof. Prof, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you very well.
Perfect. Perfect. Nice to see you, Prof, and thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Ah, well, thanks. You got me out of bed early, so that's a good start.
Well, I hope so. It's getting chilly in the mornings, but we've got a good reason to talk to you. I was saying while we were waiting for you to come on that we celebrated Africa Day last week, and I think that's the perfect time for us to discuss what you guys at the Joburg Business School are doing in respect of digital transformation in Africa. And we, of course, are very pleased and proud to host every 2 weeks JJ Cornish, who gives us a wrap-up of what's going on in the continent of Africa. Of course, we think that it doesn't get the amount of attention that it deserves. People are way more interested, or perhaps they pretend to be more interested, or perhaps the media are more interested in what's going on in China and Russia and the Ukraine and America. But actually, on our own doorstep, there are lots of exciting and interesting and sometimes tremendously important things that are going on. So let's just start off there. I mean, Africa Day, what does it mean to you? And how involved is the Joburg Business School in African affairs, in the news from the continent?
Look, we are a business school that has recently reconfigured itself to focus on digital transformation. In fact, training leaders that are fit for the future and catching the wave of what IR as it sweeps the globe. And you know, UJ is famous, well known for the fourth industrial revolution, embracing thereof. So we took a conscious decision when I started last year to also refocus our business school to look at training leaders that are fit for the future, and specifically to look at the African context, because I believe personally, and I think a lot of intellectual will bear me out on this, is that if we don't catch this wave of digitization, we are going to slip further behind as a continent. And we've got challenges, but at least this opens up an opportunity for us to step right into all of those ladders of opportunity that now exist, and I can deal with some of them. So it's a very exciting time for us. And as a business school, repositioning ourselves as boldly as we did last year caused me a couple of gray hairs, you can imagine, you know, looking at 90-degree turn away from the business landscape, yeah? But I think it worked.
So, Prof, the great thing about being in Africa is it's kind of mobile first and has been for well over 10 years. You know, we're a continent of people who figure out the quickest way. Sometimes it isn't along all the steps that everyone else has to take, because we jump over a few of them to get to where we're going. Yeah. Our banking systems are quite evolved. We have things like M-Pesa in Kenya and Tanzania. We have systems which allow people to transfer money, allow people to trade with each other, allow people to communicate in ways that were not possible before. In some ways, technology has been the great equalizer and has opened up tremendous opportunity for all Africans, young and old.
Absolutely. If you look at some statistics will bear me out here, the chances of you finding a job doubles when you're in an internet environment. Okay, so if you have access to internet, your chances of jobs or self-sufficiency actually
doubles.
I should say doubles. Over the past 20 years, African internet penetration has shot up quite dramatically. Although we're still far behind the rest of the world, it shot up from about 3 million, it's about half a billion now. So we are moving in the right direction, but not at the same pace as perhaps the rest of the world. But as we start to improve our education, our access to technology, and allow innovative spirit to flourish, I think we are going to move quicker ahead than the rest of the world. I mean, we are delivering drone blood supplies through drones in Rwanda. I mean, who would have thought that a few years ago? So the opportunities are we see entrepreneurs starting to network with each other, leveraging each other's value chains and building ecosystems. And in fact, you know, as a group and as a collective, as an ecosystem, digital ecosystem, they are much more formidable than they're functioning on their own, each one of them. And those are the things that we concern ourselves at the business school, is to look at how we can aid and assist and enhance that those processes. But Africa's not out of the woods. I mean, the COVID has dealt us a devastating blow, setting us back in so far as debt levels and you know, poverty levels quite significantly. And that is the trick. It's that Africa is so vulnerable to any economic shock due to our, shall we call it, our fiscal structure. I can talk a little bit about that. That we have to become a bit more resilient so that we can invest more, you know, take our people forward in a more resilient fashion so we don't every time get knocked over when there's a shock happening. So it's very welcoming and very heartening to hear that Google is laying a very powerful cable along the coast and will reach South Africa in July. And that will triple our bandwidth.
Wow.
And hopefully it will also bring our cost of data down because, and I'm talking at 100 miles an hour here, forgive me, but in South Africa, we have high cell phone penetration, very high, close to 90 or over 90%. But only half of them access the internet. So people, you know, need to get through to that stage where I can literally pick up my phone like I did this morning when I did a bit of research on this topic and Google just about anything I want to know. And that's when it becomes truly empowering. I can buy anything off this device. I can do all my banking, which I did this morning, without having to step into any bank. So for me, the costs are coming down with internet penetration and access to data. But for the person in the street, it still remains prohibitively. Aye, so we need to deal with those issues, yeah.
Lebang, you've got a bunch of questions too, I'm sure, for the prof.
Yeah, I'm curious, like, because I think I first heard about the fourth industrial revolution a couple of years ago. And when I first heard about it, I was told, if you don't jump on now, you're already late. So to be having this conversation in 2022, and I agree with you fully that, you know, this we should be jumping onto the bandwagon, it's never too late. Do you think we're on time or are we a little bit late? Like, honestly.
Luckily, this technology allows you to jump, to frog leap many other divides that we had in the past. And what we also find is that youngsters catch on to this technology quite fast also. So that combination of the youth that Africa has, the curiosity of the African youth, I think we are a bit late, but it's not too late. We can still catch this wave, but we can catch it only if a lot of more people wake up. Government needs to wake up with its regulatory affairs, its bandwidth issues, its cost of data. Schools need to wake up, and I can speak for hours about that. Business schools have to wake up. I mean, we took a 180-degree turn in the offering that we did. And a lot of people thought we lost it, you know.
Yeah.
But because we took that bold step, we can see that in our numbers. And we are training people that are au fait with technology, business leaders that understand the impact of technology. In fact, our vice chancellor just said the other day, the new illiteracy in the 21st century is not being au fait with technology, is to be you know, to be uncomfortable with technology. That makes you illiterate. And makes you a non-participant in what's happening.
So what do you think, Prof, the limitations are for us here in Africa? Because you mentioned this cable from Google, and we've heard in the past of these situations where, you know, something goes wrong with the undersea cable, and we've basically left adrift, which is something nobody should have in the 21st century. Yeah. Because if you're not connected to the world, then the world forgets about you very quickly. But what do you think our major limitations are? I mean, is it cost? We also know many people in this country suffer. You know, you spoke of high penetration of cell phones, but that only half the people access the internet. Is that because it's too expensive?
Yes. So our data is too expensive. So people just basically use their cell phones for messaging and communications, which is not a bad thing, but they can be so much more effective if they get access to internet. So first of all, I think for the African continent and its broader perspective, it's too vulnerable to economic shocks. And that's because we are too indebted as a continent. Our debt has shot up from over the past 5 years, it doubled from 33% of GDP to 66%. If you compare that with Japan, which has got 200%, you say, okay, we don't have a problem. But our debt ratings are so bad that we have to pay so much interest.
Yeah.
And there's therefore, after paying all of those interests, very little money left for development. So that's the one thing. The second thing that inhibits or that makes us vulnerable is that we lose about $90 billion in tax, illicit flow of funds out of Africa. So if we can retain those taxes, we could actually fund our own development. We don't need to go around to the World Bank and those places. And that's due to corruption and tax structuring. So if we can find a way to contain those two big, shall we call it, fiscal issues, so much more money will be freed up for education and for development of infrastructure. And we need to develop infrastructure. We need to get to broaden our footprint, our digital footprint. We need to build platforms. We need to reform our regulations and free the creative spirit of Africa so that people can really be part of the globe, as opposed to being, every time there's a shock, everybody becomes poorer, you know. That vulnerability bothers me tremendously, and we need to do something about that. And we've seen, you know, where there's internet penetration, there are jobs. I mean, Kenya's internet penetration is running close to 90%, and you can see the effect of that in the Kenyan economy. In Burundi, it's only 5%, and I don't have to talk about that. So there is real correlations of progress where you can unlock this potential in the manner that I've described at the moment.
Prof, are you generally quite optimistic about the future of Africa? Because this is something I often argue with people about. You know, you get a lot of pessimistic South Africans who are, they're very negative. They say, oh, well, you know, there's so much corruption, which you have hinted at already. You mentioned it just a moment ago, that we've got, you know, bad infrastructure, or at least not the infrastructure that we probably need in order to onboard more people into this fourth industrial revolution. There are obviously limiting factors, but all in all, are you the kind of person who wakes up in the morning going, I'm very glad to be here. I see opportunities. I see lots and lots of problems. Those problems need solving. And therefore, there's a way to earn money. I mean, as a business school, it would be a big problem if you were a pessimist, wouldn't it?
Well, look, there's a correlation also. Positive people live longer and they are healthier people. So, you know, that's just from that angle.
Yes.
It's advisable to be positive. But yes, I am positive. I'm working with young people. I've come from the private sector. I worked in government. And being exposed to this enormous talent of young people and bright people, it's for me uplifting. I mean, I don't sweat coming to work. I enjoy coming to work. And last week we had our first graduation of MBAs. And these are exceptionally bright people and in very hard subjects. I mean, we're talking about data science. We're talking about artificial intelligence. We're talking about young people building bots and robots. They're excited about how they can deploy it. And so all the enthusiasm is there. I think what we need to do is to get rid of the lethargic responses to real issues that can unlock this thing. The other, unlock this potential. The other bugbear that I unfortunately have to slip in everywhere where I go is the way we have reset to lower levels, reset the bar in our education, in our primary school and high school education, almost like we're saying our kids are not good enough to do and to be stretched. And so by the time they get to university, their brains are underdeveloped. And therefore, universities have to struggle to develop the brains to the extent that it should be. Whereas if they were developed at a much younger age, like most other countries are doing, the Singaporeans are doing, the Chinese are doing, they are stretching their kids. So neuroscience, unfortunately, works like that. The more you stretch your brain, the more you develop it. Brain is a muscle, you know, and you can build new neurons and new thinking patterns. And you combine analytics with design and creativity. And so those barriers of only left brain or right brain development is gone out by the window. You have to develop both your brains to survive in the future. So we have to backward integrate and also say, why are we setting so low expectations for our kids? We must raise the expectations.
Yes.
We must improve schooling. So when they get to university, they can actually flourish and live out their potential. So those are the inhibiting factors that may frustrate me. But the more we talk about it in the manner that we do today, more people should sit up and say, hey, we owe our young kids a better future.
Prof, I'm so glad that you brought up the young kids, because I look at the state of most primary schools in South Africa right now and I'm automatically bothered. When I think back to when the lockdown began, the almost automatic reaction for most schools was, you know, let's go digital, let's go online, for the schools that were able to do that. And that automatically led to the parents struggling. I mean, as a parent, I had no idea where to start. I couldn't afford to get my child a laptop. I was like, what am I doing? I'm way out of my depth. And for the other schools, particularly in other areas like the townships and, you know, Emakhaya, kids just didn't go to school. They just stopped. There was nothing that they could do. So I feel like there's a bit of a big gap that we're dealing with right now, where we're saying, you know, schools need to, you know, be more forward thinking. We need to digitize, blah, blah, blah. But if those basics of, you know, how do our kids get to school? Some of these kids are walking. Some of them aren't even eating. They're getting to school and they're falling asleep. The state of the classroom, the desks are falling apart. The teachers are angry. If all of those things are still such major problems, how then, prof, are we just, you know, supposed to, you know, just get to, oh, but here's some iPads. Don't worry about books. Here's, you know, I just worry that I see the vision. We do need to get to that point. But as you're saying, these kids' brains, by the time they get to university, they haven't even had a chance to develop to the place that they need to. So that is, I guess, what I'm posing to you. How do we get there? But also considering the basic needs of really what most of the schools in South Africa are looking like right now, the status of these schools.
So we call it the double whammy. So first of all, we have lots of the graduate unemployment is growing because we sit with lots of young people that are unemployable or underemployed at the moment. I often speak to waitresses or waiters in restaurants. These are graduates that can't find a job. So we have to play catch-up in that arena. But while we play catch-up, we can't keep on producing people that are not fit for the market as we go forward. You also have to fix the back end. So we have to accept that there will have to be a major catching up, not just for graduates, but for everybody. I mean, if you look at what's happening in the World Economic Forum says that by 2030, in 10 years' time, one-third of the jobs as we know them will disappear. All jobs that can be done routinely will be done by robots. In fact, I just read in Singapore now, because of the COVID restrictions, they are not bringing the foreigners back. They're putting all the jobs like library assistants and they put them on robots. So we, in any case, will have to go through a major reskilling of even current workers and current graduates. And also teachers, you know, as I throw them in. Yeah. So we have a backlog that can be expedited, because I do believe that once you have a degree, your brain has got some, it's shown some responsiveness and resilience for rather quicker than normal reskilling. So we'll have to reskill that. But at the same time, we can't keep on pumping people in out of the system that are not fit. So we have to go back into the system and say, fix that also as well. So our school should be digitized. Should be learning foreign languages. You know, they should be stretching their brain. So we've got a lot of our hands, but I believe it's doable. I think it's doable, yes.
Prof, I'm always very pleased to see that institutions like the Johannesburg Business School are churning out MBA graduates. The problem is, and you've kind of also mentioned this already too, does the market have enough space for people? And I think the nice thing about being in business or being an entrepreneur or getting an MBA is that really you open up all kinds of avenues to start something even where there isn't something. It's not like studying law or medicine and hoping that there's a space for you in the system. You guys are adding value to the entire economy, I should think. But there is also something I was a little bit concerned to hear, and it's something I've thought about a lot. You know, we are churning out from the basic education department and even, you know, some of our better high schools, churning out people that may not be ready for the kind of tertiary level education that you guys provide. What I mean by that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong about this, is that we seem to have people who are coming out of the school system who sometimes aren't even literate and numerate. And this is a major, major problem, because you can't, as the Johannesburg Business School, which is a thriving, a complex, an evolved and a much more a much much higher level institution than many of the others around South Africa, you can't be playing catch up with students. You can't be taking in people who haven't learnt during the 12 years of school the basic things that they need to grasp so that your degrees are worthwhile.
So we accept that we play in a particular segment and we will make the difference where we can. in our segment that we have influence over. But I fully agree with you. We can't, from university, we can't correct the school system, and that's a discussion that we have to have. And I won't repeat what we've just discussed here. I think we are at idem with the fact that we have to fix up our school systems. But where we do play a role, we are very conscious of societal that we're operating. So we do play because we see that not everybody's going to get a job. Although with an MBA, your chance of getting a job is a lot higher than other degrees. But we also play in the entrepreneurial space. And I deliberately don't call it SMME because I want to get out of this notion that all entrepreneurs should remain small.
Yeah.
Call it entrepreneurship development. And with technology, we find that you can platform and you can become a significant player very quickly, in fact, eroding a value chain of the big corporates because they are not as agile as the smaller startups. And I'm happy to see that in South Africa, we're starting to see tech startups that are actually becoming very meaningful players. I mean, we see it across the world. The 7 fastest growing companies are tech startups, and they are turning billions of rands out. So those intelligent businesses are going to become the order of the day. So we're positioning ourselves to assist those types of entrepreneurs. But we are, I will agree with you, it's not our job to go back and fix the school system. But interestingly enough, in the entrepreneur space, we have grown from 200 about just two years ago, entrepreneurs under our wing to over 1,000. Wow. And the way we've done it is that our MBA students have actually entrepreneurship as his project, as his practical project. So we combine that they become real-world consultants, and we have seen quite a bit of success with that. In fact, on average, our SMEs have grown by 25%, even during the COVID period. What's also interesting, one tends to think of entrepreneurship or entrepreneurs mostly in a survivalist mode or through the survivalist lens. We are now seeing people that exit very high-paying jobs, you know, and they said, I'm going to start my own business. I've learned enough about how to manufacture soap and detergents. I'm going to start my own business. And they come with their degrees through our entrepreneurship program, and they supply now to large markets in the township. And what we are doing is we keep them in this digital ecosystem that we are busy developing with cloud computing and all of those things, so that they can talk to each other. And I always use the example, and it's a very simplistic example, is that the auntie that runs a spaza shop in the one corner might run out of flour to make a fat cook.
Yes.
And instead of taking the taxi to Johannesburg to go buy flour, she could just go onto the internet or onto a system and check another auntie next door might have some flour. And in that way, collaborate and bring the cost, drive the cost down. Now, that's a very simplistic example, but it's a good example to show our entrepreneurs, if they collaborate and work together, how they can become much more effective and cost effective also. And then the township economy is buoyant. I mean, it's really, really buoyant. I want to stay away from entrepreneurship just being a township venture. You know, it's for smart young people to become business people.
But there are certain externalities which also affect business in this country. And I'm sure it's stuff that comes across your desk all the time and things that you're concerned with. We do have a very government-dominated economy in South Africa. The government is the biggest spender. In very many cases, it's also the major partner for any independent companies. You know, if they don't do business with government, they're really dealing with the scraps. And a lot of people in South Africa look to government. But government, we know, the president admitted as much in his State of the Nation speech this year, government can't create jobs. So there's extra pressure on all of us in business to create opportunities for people. Is there anything that ordinary people can do? And what would you advise government to do if you were asked, and I'm sure you are asked occasionally, what advice do you have for them?
Well, look, so if you just look at, I know government don't create jobs, but government sit on an enormous expenditure framework. I mean, government is probably the biggest spender. It is the biggest spender. And so they can be smart, and they have to fix it up, and they have to lock people up that don't come to the party. But where government should focus on is to create the enabling environment. In other words, make sure that our roads are proper. Make sure that our electricity supply or energy supply is consistent and enabling. Make sure that our ports are operative. Make sure that our supply chains can work. You know, just basically fix the country. I mean, I drive around parts of this country, and I can't believe what has happened, that we have actual main roads that are, you have to drive on the sideways to get through this town.
So
it's not just about from a commercial perspective, but it's also from a psychological perspective. If you work in a place that's clean and neat and conducive, you won't think too little about it. It makes you, it gives you energy, it gives you positive spirit. And so government has to fix those things. And I think, Gareth, if I may be as bold, and I come from the days when you were an activist, you got beaten up, so I'm quite prepared to take a few shots on this. We as civil society are too passive. I mean, we have to march and we have to keep government accountable. We have to tell government we are not prepared to live in this filth. We are not prepared to drive through these potholes. And as a civil society, we have to keep them accountable. We are sick and tired of our kids falling down pit latrines. I mean, it's just unbelievable. We are sick and tired of our kids being undereducated, and they can't therefore be successful at university. And I tell you, we are a very rich country. I've been with the tax authority for a long time. We collect trillions of rand, so we collect a lot of money. So I'm not saying that we can fix everything, but we can do a lot more to make for an enabling environment, and also whilst in that enabling environment, call out people that are corrupt and find ways that government spending is directed to create the psychological space where we all can be positive, because that's already a big plus. So perhaps I'm becoming too philosophical for you.
No, but, not at all. No, Prof. This is why we have you on, and I'm thrilled. Mm. I'm thrilled that we got a whole half an hour with you this morning. There are probably enough questions that both Lebang and I have to talk to you for 3 hours. But just to wrap it up, I'll let you have the last word, Lebang. Is there anything else you want to ask Prof. Karolison before we say goodbye?
It's not really a question. It's more like I'm quite excited to see what the Joburg Business School will really like digitally have to do in this transformation. Because one of my things has always been, why is, for example, entrepreneurship not taught at a primary school level, at a high school level? Why is that not, is there no emphasis put on that? So I'm quite keen and excited to see what you guys do. And I really, really believe that there'll be a positive outcome and an impact, because again, it's up to us. We can't sit and wait for the government to come and save us. Mm-hmm. We need people like you, Prof, who believe enough in this to share that same vision to people who can actively participate in that. And I think the big answer in that is working with young people and allowing their creativity to flourish. So thank you guys for your work, and let's see what you guys can do. That's what I'm keen for.
Well, watch us. We are the, I always say we're the baby, the newest school, 2 years old, but we're the noisiest baby. But we are, I am excited also because we've just graduated our first MBA students, and we had a huge intake, well, not a huge, but quite a big intake in PhD, doctoral students in digital transformation, 33 actually, we were only going to take 8. And there's a huge interest in us offering a different business school experience. I'm not saying the other business schools are not necessarily the right space, but we want to offer a different experience that make you tech digitally savvy, and hopefully that you can impart that wherever you go into society, because we're only one school and we hope that that influence will go across the country. But thanks for having me. I really enjoyed this discussion. And you guys stretched me a bit.
No, what a pleasure to have you on. I mean, from what you're saying, there's no lack of talent in this continent and in this country. There's no lack of opportunity for us to find ways to make ourselves useful in the marketplace. I think that there are exciting possibilities just about everywhere, and I'm delighted. I'm going to echo Lebang's statement about how the Johannesburg Business School is really at the forefront of pushing these things forward. Thank you, Prof. Good to have you on.
Thank you, and have a good day.
Professor, that is Professor Randall. I'm going to sneeze there. Professor Randall Karolison, who is from the Johannesburg Business School. What a pleasure to have you on. That is also a wrap on the show for this morning, everybody. We will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. bright and early. And don't miss, while we're talking about the Johannesburg Business School, Africanalysis, which happens every 2 weeks with JJ Cornish, and really is the best way for you to get a handle on what's happening in Africa. We'll see you tomorrow. Cheers, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye. CliffCentral.com